WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A judge finds dangerous conditions at the Fluvanna Correctional Center for Women are not being addressed. One of the questions before this year's General Assembly, how much money should we spend to make schools safer? And we talk with Greg Verson, better known as Professor Blues. He's back with Blues Valley this weekend after a two-year hiatus. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, January 4th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from the Shops at Stonefield at Route 29 and Hydraulic Road in Charlottesville, featuring a collection of shopping, dining, and entertainment experiences with parking available. Learn more at shopsatstonefield.com.
A federal judge has ruled that the Virginia Department of Corrections has failed to correct what he characterized as dangerous conditions involving health care at the Fluvanna Correctional Center for Women. WCVE's Charles Fishburne reports.
U.S. District Judge Norman K. Moon issued an injunction requiring an adequate nursing staff within 45 days and stretchers, oxygen tanks and masks, and suction machines at every building housing inmates within 2 weeks.
The judge is very critical of the care.
Carl Tobias, law professor at the University of Richmond.
And he offers a number of graphic examples of that, where people were very sick and some even died.
Litigation to improve conditions goes back years. There was a consent decree and a settlement in 2016, but Judge Moon says they've run out of time to comply.
My sense is the state may well appeal to the Fourth Circuit.
Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
A big proposed pay increase for Charlottesville's mayor and city council is unlikely after state legislatures said they will not change state law to make it happen. The Daily Progress reports that Democratic delegate David Toscano of Charlottesville said Thursday that he will not introduce the changes in the upcoming General Assembly session, which starts next Wednesday, that would have been necessary to allow Charlottesville city council members to determine their own pay. Councilors voted 3-2 last year to allow the city to operate outside of state guidelines for mayor and councilor pay. Delegate Rob Bell, Republican from Albemarle, also said that he opposes the proposal. Governor Ralph Northam has proposed new legislation aimed at safely disposing of coal ash, helping coastal communities deal with flooding caused by climate change, and continuing the cleanup of the Chesapeake Bay. The legislative agenda unveiled on Thursday includes the Coastal Protection Act. That law would allow the state to use an estimated $50 million in revenue from the sale of carbon pollution credits for coastal resilience projects. It also would dedicate funds for economic transition for coal communities. The Water Quality and Safety Act would require all coal ash to be removed from unlined pits and either recycled or moved to EPA-approved landfills. Another bill would make it easier for rural communities to access matching grants to reduce polluted runoff from roads and parking lots. The majority of localities across Virginia are experiencing a severe shortage of psychiatrists and other mental health professionals. A new statewide task force is exploring ways to address this. Their first meeting is Friday. WCVE's Megan Pauley reports.
Medicaid expansion is creating an opportunity for thousands of Virginians to enroll in health care coverage, many for the first time. But, says Sarah Dunnigan, a workforce development advisor for the governor, it's also creating a demand for even more behavioral health specialists.
And, you know, the reality is, you know, as the population grows in the state, the number of people who need services is going to naturally grow due to the prevalence of, you know, these issues in the overall population.
That's Rhonda Thissen with the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Virginia. According to the advocacy group, 1 in 5 people experience some sort of mental illness every year. The work group will look into ways to entice more people to not only join the behavioral health workforce, but also to take jobs in rural areas where the workforce shortage is even more pronounced. Megan Pauley, WMRA News.
The group hopes to finalize recommendations ahead of the General Assembly's 2020 session, which begins next week. The National Domestic Violence Hotline reports a decrease in calls over the holidays, but come January, those numbers rise again. In many cases, women report being choked, an assault that may not look as serious as it is. And a note, this report, while clinical, may be a sensitive topic for some listeners. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman reports.
If you know about crime from TV, you might think strangulation leaves handprints on the neck. In fact, UVA nursing professor Catherine Lawn says it may not be that obvious.
The brain has reduced oxygen, and you start getting these little burst capillaries, and we can see those on the face, on the neck. We're also getting small micro hemorrhages in the brain, so there's potential traumatic brain injury going on.
And in cases of domestic violence, where 30 to 50% of women experience strangulation, brain injuries may occur repeatedly, putting victims at increased risk for stroke and death. That's because men who choke women are more likely to kill.
They are about 7 times more likely to go on to later murder their partners.
And their partners may not be the only ones in danger. Men who use this form of assault are also more likely to kill anyone who tries to intervene. That's why Lawn is working to educate police about strangulation, and with a grant from the National Institute for Justice, she plans to study large numbers of women who have been strangled to see if repeated attacks do long-term functional damage to the brain. In Charlottesville, I'm Sandy Houseman.
After several high-profile school shootings, lawmakers are trying to figure out how to make the classroom safer, but as Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports, they may be at odds over how much money to spend.
The school shooting in Parkland last year caused some serious soul-searching among lawmakers in Virginia, and they put together a special committee to look at increasing school safety. Committee members ended up recommending counselors be freed of administrative duties, like overseeing standardized tests, but they did not recommend hiring any new school counselors. Rachel Dean at the Legal Aid Justice Center says failing to invest in more counselors will only contribute to higher caseloads.
It can be really hard to access the curriculum and to excel academically and think about career development when you are also trying to handle mental health needs and trauma in school.
The American School Counselors Association says schools should have one counselor for every 250 students, but making that happen in Virginia would cost about $82 million. Chris Duncombe at the Commonwealth Institute says Governor Ralph Northam has a proposal on this that would be a strong first step.
The goal is over the next 3 years to get to that desired benchmark of one counselor for every 250 students. And it starts us down that path by putting in $36 million to increase the required ratios in both our elementary, middle, and high schools.
But even if lawmakers were to approve that $36 million this year, they'd still have to find $46 million over the next 2 years to meet the goal. I'm Michael Pope.
Finally today, for 32 years, WMRA presented the best in blues every Saturday night with a professor in Blues Valley. Now, after a 2-year hiatus, the professor is back on Saturday night. WMRA's Chris Boros spoke with the blues master about his return to the airwaves.
Professor Blues joins me in the studio. Hey, it's great to see you.
It is good to be here with you, Chris.
Once I started here, everyone was saying to me, Blues Valley. That was a great show. Like, what happened? Where did it go? Is it ever coming back? So I guess the first question is, why did you leave and why are you back?
Well, 32 years behind the mic, longer than I worked as a university professor. And I thought at the time, 32, it's a nice number. That's just part ways and everything would be all right.
And what happened?
Well, we traveled, but I couldn't go anywhere, hardly, without someone saying something to me about missing Blues Valley. And I appreciated that, the response from folks, even late in the 2-year segment, were still commenting to me about it. At home, down in my computer room, I would listen to blues while I did my computer stuff. Sometimes I would just have to get out of my chair and dance around in a room by myself to a blues tune that moved me. And it really made me think, why am I not sharing this music again?
So you missed it.
I really did. It's like the proverbial well and water. And also I thought about, I had a lot of friendships develop with callers during that 32-year period. A special group of the guys at Buckingham Correctional Facility. They don't get much. Saturday night was a special night based on the letters that I would get from them periodically.
There is something special about music when you meet someone who likes the same kind of music you're into. It's like there's this automatic connection. Have you felt the same way with the blues?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And people who love the blues are great people.
What is it about the blues? Like, do you remember the first blues song you heard that just changed your life?
Jimmy Reed. I mean, his were the first 3 albums I bought in high school. I heard Baby, What You Want Me to Do? And that was it. and listened to it on the radio when I was in high school, coming out of Nashville, Tennessee, Randy's Record Shop.
Was that rare for a kid from Nashville listening to the blues where your friends all listen to the country and stuff?
I was in, you know, I grew up with R&B, and Jimmy Reed was really the one blues man who I hearkened back and saying, Jimmy, you're the reason I've been doing this for this long.
Over those 32 years doing Blues Valley, is there a memorable moment that you remember doing the show?
It was not during the show so much as receiving a letter that said, Dear Professor, I'm listening to your show, and I listen every night till 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm 81 years old. That is Mrs. B, and longtime listeners will be familiar with her. She was a church organist, and at midnight on just about every Saturday night, I would play an organ piece, Blues for Mrs. B.
So your most memorable moment had to do with a listener.
Yes.
That's great.
She was a special person, and even when she moved to Bridgewater Home before she died, I had a chance to visit her several times. Mm-hmm. People who love the blues and listen to Blues Valley are just special folks for me.
So you're back tomorrow night. What can we expect?
A special treat on this beginning of year 33. When you think of music and you think of 33, you think of LPs.
Yeah.
Blues Valley started with two turntables and a microphone. And this show is from the music library that I used in 1985 when I started.
You're excited to get back at it, I can tell.
I am, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm selecting my music, and it's going to be 3 hours of nostalgia and good times and good blues.
All right, we're looking forward to it as well. We're excited. Professor Blues, back tomorrow, 8 o'clock.
Amen, brother.
I know I'll be listening. I hope you are too. And I hope you enjoy your Friday. That's the podcast for today. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening.